Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Hello, my name is Almeen, and I am here today with Rogier Shadeh, and this is actually our final show in the 13-week segment. We run our shows in segments, and so next time around, next show is a brand new series that we will begin, and sometimes we change topics and format just a little bit after a 13-week series to keep it fresh and new for you. But today is our final one in our 13-week series that we've had so far. And next week, who knows what you'll get. So, my brothers and sisters, thank you for being our light family and joining us again for this hour. Rogier, welcome and thank you very much. And please just tuck in with whatever good questions you think the listeners out there might enjoy.
Okay, well, I wanted to ask about what seems to be part and parcel of the ascension, namely that what you've spoken of body parts changing internally, I assume, but in the brain, and I don't really recall the things that you've mentioned, but I wondered if you could talk about that a little bit and then really answer my question, which is whatever has changed, would that show up, for example, if a doctor or a surgeon was to investigate the matter?
Okay. Yes, indeed, major changes have happened in terms of metamorphosing man to what is called superhumanness. And the superhumanness that Mother refers to, that's her phrase that she coined, means that a lot of the things that have plagued man in the past in the form of limitations are gradually being removed. It is astonishing to me the difference in the level at which classes can function this year, even from last year, and last year from the year before. I might have a class of 25 or 30 people for 5 days. They come in, some of them are in ego identity in terms of that they are in a dialogue in their minds. They're seeking to get out of that fishbowl in which they're identifying with the body and the mind and the heart. By the end of the week, they're out of that. And I can say that in the last months, there only has been one that did not do that because the person actually had already decided that they were going to leave in terms of that they were going to leave for the spirit world. So the point of the matter is, it's very, very rare that this does not occur. When people come into the class now, by the end of the week, it's 9 times out of 10 that they're speaking one of the holy languages, a tool they can use regularly, or they're writing some of the languages, or both, in 1 week. We are solving mysteries within the cosmos now, in a half a day, what it took my class a week to solve a year ago. Those are dramatic changes, but because they're subtle, you know, we don't realize how people's vocabulary out there have changed. On talk shows, in books, things that are bestsellers that you really could never have thought people would even buy 2 years ago, or terms they use. Mind and heart is opening all around us, but it's gradual and we have to watch for it. So for sure, major changes have been taking place in humanity, coupled with major bodily changes. Let's give some examples. If Mother has said, for example, that the pineal had its direction reversed from what it should be, instead of output, it was getting input. Have I got that right? Hold on 1 second. It should have been able to do output and input. It was doing output, but not in the way that it should be. So intuitively, people were not receiving the non-cognitive information that the third eye is famous for interpreting. Well, it's actually receiving. It's the pineal that interprets it. That has been reversed. We're now able to output and receive through the pineal gland. The pineal gland, according to Mother, has been reversed. Is it the function in the cell that's been reversed, or the way that the gland itself is that's reversed? I don't know what it means when she tells me that it's reversed. It may be a cellular function that will not show up under a microscope. She has said, for example, that a tube has formed between the pineal and the pituitary gland as part of the huge effort that Mother and Father are doing to restore to humanity their incorruptible white magic. Well, the tube is dealing with the transference of codes. It's not dealing with the transference of physical substances like blood or something like that. So, in other words, it is possibly an etheric tube. Spirals of light used to carry messages between the heart and the mind, and for a long time they weren't in the bloodstream. And so heart and mind for people were very separate. Heart didn't really speak to mind, and mind didn't really know what heart was thinking, and we often lost loved ones before we realized how precious they were to us. So Mother, in May of 2007, put major spirals of light in the bloodstream to interpret between the mind and the heart. But it's gone a step further. Now the spirals are no longer there because there is a unified language that Mother has created for light and love to speak to one another, for frequency and light to communicate, called the language of light and love. And we've spoken about that on several of the shows in the past. And for those of you that are catching up with the archives, I'm sure you will have heard it. But now there is an instantaneous communication throughout the body. Things are instantaneously known, and it's through telepathy and empathy. Telepathy and empathy is not a linear relay of information, something Mother has really worked on getting rid of because it created linear time. It's instantly known. Somebody thinks something, somebody else hears it as you think it. So this, now the spirals are removed. If there are organ changes, and forgive me, my life is a blur from the information that I bring in. I don't even know what is written in my books, to a very large extent, especially the manuscripts that are unpublished. Manuscripts that are published, people ask me questions about, so I know sort of what is in them. But if there are physical changes that have been made, will it show up? If the person is absolutely convinced that it will, that change has been made in them. For instance, we had a dramatic miracle happen in terms of entire liver replacement that happened for one of the oracles in Toronto. Her name is Bodana, and you'll see her name in some of our books because she contributes. She's one of the oracles of the order there. Major transplant. Total miracle. She knows it. So now it shows up on, it will show up on X-ray, it will show up on ultrasound, or whatever it is that people use, I think it's ultrasound, to see a liver, because she knows it. And if she doesn't know it, and the doctor believes it should be a certain way, it could still appear that way to them. You know, it's a little bit like the experiments that people have done where they've now uncovered that there is a real influence on the result of scientific experiments of the person experimenting, that they're actually influencing the results. It's the same issue. Did that answer it?
Yeah, I think it does. I was just There's a lot of noise here suddenly, so I'm just trying to close the window.
Oh, okay. Well, if that answered it, then what would be our next question?
The next question would be about the youthening techniques that you've spoken of, and really, what are they and how do they work?
All right. Now, first of all, in the multiple sacred libraries that have been opening around the earth, and I have been working very, very late at night, every night, just trying to get to the point where I can at least write down a tiny bit from one library every day. And it doesn't happen that way because these incredibly beautiful secrets start coming out, and you know, 3 days later I'm still on one library, but there's 129 to open. So if something physical should be translated or written or drawn, and the oracles are helping. So they have come out with extraordinary youthening techniques. One such technique that comes to mind, and this will be in the book Windows into Eternity that will be out by the end of 2008, it's being proofread as we speak, is about living water, where there is an incantation to create living water. It's quite an interesting thing. I was in Monte Carlo in June of 2007 with my little girl, and I kept seeing the scene. And for months afterwards, I kept seeing the scene of somebody in the Middle Ages in one of the streets in Monte Carlo, a sort of middle-aged Romeo and Juliet style clothing, you know. And there was a merchant buying with a big bag of gold a bottle of water from somebody in the street. And finally, and water was in a beautiful gold flask, but I could, it looked like water, had filigree around it with glass in the inside, looked like water. So I said to Mother, why do I keep seeing the scene? And she says, because that bottle of water is still in the palace, in a vault, in that city. And it's owned by the monarchs there. And she said that is living water. And then I said, but Mother, what makes living water? Because I'd encountered water before that was in a bowl, actually, that didn't ever get corrupted. And I wondered what made water like that. And she said, specific spirals of light. There's a specific numerical sequence. If you have that sequence in the water, then the water doesn't corrupt. And that water can be produced by you and drunk, and it makes the body more incorruptible. So anyway, I got the sequences, the numerical sequences from Mother, but then later on in the White Horse Libraries of Southern Africa, and there's some in England as well, this came out that there is an incantation to produce living water. So living water is one of those. The other thing is, I believe that some of the kingdoms have come in and they've given incantations that are sacred words that their kingdom have empowered to bring youth back. Those are the sort of the more superficial things. The other thing that is now based on eternal principles is like this. When you cut a flower, and I think we've discussed this on together, you and I, actually, on one of the previous shows, when you cut a flower, immediately its energy drains out at the bottom of the flower. And when you resist life or only live from, say, the upper chakras, you get that same sort of a cut happening in the flow of prana in the body. And it drains out the bottom so that you become subject to the law of gravitation. The law of gravitation and the law of levitation should be in total balance. Recently, Monk has said, by writing it in the Book of the One Life, that the law of levitation and gravitation means that there is a renewing and a destructuring going on. The law of gravitation destructures. If it destructures more than there's renewal, well, then you have aging. And Mother said recently in the Book of Life that that law is going to be changed. It's going to become the law of regeneration, meaning that a pattern that is obsolete doesn't have to destructure chaotically for a new pattern to take its place. It will effortlessly change into the new pattern, meaning that there is no valid basis at this point for aging to happen. Aging will happen if we oppose life, because that's a way of deliberately leaking out our life force. That's a separate reason. But aging as a reality, when Mother changed the law of levitation and gravitation to one of regeneration, as a reality, its real part in the cosmos, was removed. It ceased to exist. Let's take a commercial break and then we'll be back.
Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back. And here I think I fully answered that. It was this very vital issue of not opposing life, the fact that the real part of aging and decay has been removed. And was there anything else that I didn't cover?
No, there isn't, but there is something I wanted to ask about levitation and gravitation, even though that has now been replaced, but what then of what people usually associate with the word levitation, as in, kind of floating above the ground?
When levitation is very highly accentuated, you do actually float above the ground. I have myself had that experience, and you're in such a state of praise, you are in total oblivion, that you really even left the ground. I've had it while I'm working on people. I've had it in front of a group of men. I think I told the story somewhere in one of my books. I had a men's workshop at my house. My home is so sacred, and it's like a smallish temple, and, we've always... groups love to come here, and they had been on a vision quest. I had taken them and put them in a cave for a few days just so they could be in the silence, and then they came back to the house and they were here for a workshop, and I'd had major revelations the entire day long. They had had multiple miracles that they witnessed. And so I was actually, I got into my bath water, and my bath water turned pink purple immediately when I got in. I went into such a state that my little assistant, she had to haul me out of the bath. She was just 5'2" and had to haul me out of the bath, get me, she got me on a table and put some sheets over me. And she called the men in because she didn't know what to do. And she said, "What are we doing?" And by the time they came in, I was floating several inches above the table. They didn't know what to do. And the funny story of it is, we had a cook here cooking for the men for the week from Hare Krishna Center. So they went down to go and get his assistance. What do we do? She's floating above the bed. And when I, in my experience, I was standing looking down at the world, looking at its future, and seeing the difference that individuals can make and where the beauty of this planet would be taking us into this incredible ascension. When I came back to what my body was, I heard these Hare Krishna chants happening around me and the drum playing, and they were all on their knees around the table. It's very sweet. They were so precious. But that happens when you're in a state of total ecstatic praise. And I think you and I were talking this morning even about the issue of that there are some buildings that don't need repair. Didn't we mention that in the car this morning, I think?
Yeah, actually, there is. But I just before we go there, I just wanted to ask, what if this image then of well, you know, masters from the Far East, and then they'll start levitating at will in front of the student, kind of thing. I mean, that seems to be a very sort of what would for them would be a kind of concrete experience of just being present and suddenly floating into the air rather than.
Once you master what you're doing, I'm sure you could do it at will. All I can say here is they must not have very much to do. That's all I can say, because if the sum total of one's ambitions, I'm not slighting them by any means, I'm sure they have other ambitions, is to master at will some skill like that, I mean, what's the point of it? And also, I used to do miracles for miracles' sake for people. I did it for several years, and I had people, I would stand and work and work and work with them until 4 in the morning. I'd get up at 7. I'd do it all over again. You know, none of that really made a major difference. But when they do the miracles, that makes a difference. And, you know, the Master Gary is a phenomenal example. He did the miracle. When he does the miracle, it's in his heart. He knows it. But when I do it, people will argue it away, because the left brain tries to hang in there for dear life to its tyrannical rule of that person's life. They will argue it away. I mean, the miracles that I describe in A Life of Miracles, like if you look at how, you know, I get tubes around people. I did bypass surgery for them, for heaven's sakes. Where are those people today? Virtually every one of them turned on me with quite some resentment, because it put them in the position where they had to say that their mind could not control the outcome. And it created actually an adverse effect when I did the miracles. So now, you know what? If they happen, they happen. But I'm certainly not going to levitate at will. I've never even tried it. There's so much glorious information and perception and miracles happening day by day. Why get hung up in some specific sign? It doesn't release man from the tyranny of mind. I know that certain Nagwas go that way. It might if the rest of the world is shut out. But if they leave my home, the minute they go out in the traffic and things, the mind will just argue it away, even if it means discredit Almin.
Okay. All right. Good. Now, what of then these century-old temples that do not fall into disrepair?
Oh, yes. The reason they don't fall into disrepair, and there are many sacred sites like that around the world where there's hardly any decay on the building. The reason is the states of praise that are being exercised within them, so that the law of gravitation doesn't get a hold. It will tackle any and all building blocks of existence that's in a form, if it can. That's the past. Now life is different. But in the past, if that gravitation couldn't get a hold, because day by day by day that monastery had monks in there in states of praise, the building will not destructure, which is the job of gravitation. Now, will a building destructure since everything is in regeneration? If we live knowing that that's the case, then no, our homes will not destructure. If we know without a shadow of a doubt that everything is made new moment by moment. My brothers and sisters, you who are our listeners out there, there's only one moment being lived. A little bit like the movie Groundhog's Day, where, Bill Murray has to live the same day over and over and over till he really gets it right. We're living the same moment over and over. And Mother chose the moment, that is the moment or two in which creation takes place, so that every moment gives the maximum opportunity and potential for newness, while yet bringing the insights forward of every moment just past. This is the way Mother has set it up after much trial and error. But it literally means that every moment is our brand new moment. If we live that, no, our homes won't destructure. But if there's a place in our life that's out of order, they could well mirror to us that there's something that needs to change. And homes, structures in the dream symbols that we gave in Secrets of the Hidden Realms normally has to do with belief systems.
All right. Now, this point about the building blocks, I think in one of the previous shows you talked about that as well, and how the mother is not actually, cannot be defined or is not composed of these building blocks herself. So what does that mean? What is she then composed of?
Of fields. And the fields, you know, it's hard for me to define what a field is, because there's questions there that I haven't even asked her, because this is brand new information that I've been working with for about a week. But the fields are things such as omniscience, omnipotence. Omnipotence is not power. Power was part of the building blocks in that it was released through the building block of presence. And also it preceded the building block of presence. In other words, it's like a broth around the vegetable, as I described it before. You know, the broth is made from vegetables, but the vegetables are also in the broth. And so power and omnipotence are two different things. Omnipotence is a quality. She's made of a field of qualities. It's the best at this moment that I can describe it. I'm hoping that my insight of that will become a lot more vast.
Well, what I myself thought was quite interesting about that is that then if love is one of the building blocks, that technically we cannot say that the goddess is love or anything like that.
You're right. Very smart. Because she produces love. But
yeah.
One of the building blocks, that one of the qualities of the field that Mother is made of is divine compassion. So we are faced with very limited vocabulary in the English language. Love is multiple things. We have one word. In these advanced languages that we speak here, which are part of the, that I've been putting out there, because these languages, when they're mother and father's languages, whatever you say in them actually is so, it will and must happen. Because mother's language cannot be used to say anything that isn't reflective of what she is. So the point is that when you use those languages, even the word is, like he is some such and such, the word, let's say he is, the word is after he, there can be over 100 words for the word is. Because he is happy versus he is discouraged, whole different frequency to the word is. There can be hundreds of ways to use the word is. In my translations, people say, this can't be right. You know, you don't repeat the word is. And look, in the English, it is the word is several times. That's because the is word changes. Even the word love. Love can be an emotion when it's based on desire. Love can also be a state of being when it's based on total inclusiveness of vision. Love can be an attitude when it's coupled with a perceptual component. Mother is not made of love as we know it. Love also is an element. It's an actual frequency pad. She's not made of it. She produces it. So that is correct. She's not love. But she is divine compassion and many other subtle forms of qualities that are similar to love.
All right.
You know what? I'm looking at our clock here, and I think it's time for a break again. So bear with us, folks, and we will be back in just a few minutes.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
And now we continue with our show for today, and Ruchir Shageh is here to help us. Ruchir, dearest, where are we heading?
Well, I have a question here which is actually entirely unrelated to what we've been discussing before, but it's about animals and geographical areas. I think one interesting thing would be, you know, maybe to understand how it is that animals become extinct in the first place, but the real question here is if that does any damage to an area when an animal leaves, either through extinction or because it's transplanted to another area.
Oh, fascinating question. Well, let's go to and look at the elimination of animal species as a whole topic and dig around in it a little bit. Number one, it is so that animals that are native to a geographical area, every life produces a frequency. And people will gravitate to areas where there's a harmonious compatibility with frequencies. Same frequencies used to attract. And that happened up until August of 2006. We have multiple times mentioned that on our past programs of why that change actually happened. So at that time, if somebody had a lot of red in their aura, for instance, they might move to the red rock area of Sedona, feeling at home. Suddenly, in August of 2006, the area no longer works for them, because now opposite areas attract. If they have an imbalance of too much red, they will go to an area like Oregon, where I live, where everything is green. And it will make them very happy to be in this opposite light and frequency, because light and frequency now opposites attract. So it is so that animals themselves might move out of choices to new habitats because of this principle changing. However, the life of an animal, as the life of a person, has a song that it sings. It has a frequency signature. And that frequency signature is what is good for the land. If it wasn't, the animal would move somewhere else. We do find that migration routes and so on have changed, and that is something we can discuss next. Part of it is this issue that opposite frequencies are now attracting. The animals could go into different type of habitats, overcoming a lot of instinctual guidance from eons of existence. But when an animal is meant to be on the land because its frequency is compatible, the animal's frequency is enhancing the land. When it's removed from the land for one reason or another, the land itself will suffer. Secondly, let's see. You had another question about that. I guess it's why they're becoming extinct, or what did you ask?
What would be the metaphysics of an animal going extinct?
Okay. An animal, when fauna in a specific area, the animals in a specific area become extinct, it is indicative, and the extinct is not a natural cause, it's people exterminating them. What it is mirroring is the loss of instinctual nature. My brothers and sisters, the instinctual nature within a man and a woman is the first place that new potential hits. We have described in past about interpretive dancing as a very good example of how the high mind and the instinctual lower mind function jointly to interpret the unexplainable and the unknowable, which is potential that's never been accessed. How it comes online within, the first spot it comes through is the instinctual wild woman archetype. And there's a very lovely book out on that, which for me, the foreword, I made a photocopy of that and gave it to my classes. Haven't much read the rest of the book, but its preface or foreword was magnificent. And it's on She Who Runs with the Wolves, which wrote very carefully about how to identify when your wild woman archetype is out of balance, when it's not expressed. The male has the green man, the wild instinctual man. The same thing. When it is not expressed, it can go out of balance. And there's this wonderful little book, and I don't remember its name offhand, that is actually...
Yeah, I know the name, but...
Oh, what is the name?
It's probably Women Who Run With the Wolves.
No, this other book is supposed to be... if you ask freshmen that enter Stanford University what is their favorite book, this was the most widely suggested book, and it's a book of Englishmen going up the river into Africa.
But what did you mean then with She Who Runs With the Wolves?
She Who Runs With the Wolves is about the female instinctual self. But this book dealt with the male instinctual self, where the Englishmen became quite savage when they went up the river. And the, quote, savages, as they called them, were appalled because their instinctual wild man was coming out because they were leading civilization, but it came out jaggedly because it had not been properly expressed. When these things are not expressed, then the fauna suffers because they are the mirror of that. So that's the second thing. Now, the third thing is this. There are definitely old species that represent principles that have become obsolete because of the dramatic cosmic changes that are becoming obsolete. In their place, two things are happening. Species that became obsolete that shouldn't have are making a comeback. People are breeding quahas, and it's... either K-W-A-G-G-A or it's Q-U-A-G-G-A, but the quagga is half zebra, half horse looking animal that became extinct in South Africa after being extensively hunted. They're being bred. And the quagga is back. The Tasmanian tigers are back. Very few of them. Those were one of the species that Mother told me to fetch back. But I know they've been cited because somebody in my class brought an article about it, because I told them they're coming back. And, oh, they are. And they brought me the article. But some species that shouldn't be extinct are coming back. Then new species are being created. And new species are being let out of libraries in the form of elementals that are producing new species of plants and little animals. So, and I've been working with those for weeks. Just beautiful, devic creatures coming out of the libraries, each of them producing some new species. So that's another reason why this has happened.
Okay, and what did you want to say about migration?
Ah, yes. Migration, bird migratory routes have kept open ley lines of the earth. Ley lines are very much like the lines we had in our etheric body. The Chinese have always said that they're there, but the Russians actually produced technology where you can actually visibly see the etheric body's bluish lines around the physical form. Mother recently eliminated linear movement of light. Our bodies that were linear lines of light, as I have drawn in many of our earlier books, have become fields. So the Earth's ley lines are no longer ley lines. They're a field. What happens to man happens to the Earth, happens to the macrocosm. So the migratory routes of birds are no longer needed to keep the ley lines flowing properly, because man, having had much forgetfulness, and there's a whole reason behind that, but man having forgotten history, it's necessary for us to remember history. That's why reading that the book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is a real plus. When we remember history, the Earth's energy flows properly. But there are no longer really migratory lines necessary when the Earth's etheric body has become a field.
So does it still have ley lines then or not?
No. It's a
field. What exactly do they need to keep open then? I mean, if you're talking about history.
Well, they don't, you see. And I don't know how it now has to work. But you can be sure that birds are not going to migrate the way they used to because the essential reason behind it is removed. I don't know what the ramifications of it would be, but that is very possible going to create different ways and patterns for birds to behave. I'm sure they will still be moving back and forth because of the seasons. Will they still be in the old lines? Maybe. But if those lines change, that's why.
Okay, well, because we did actually have one question about that, about history, the importance of remembering it, and yet you seem to be not very extensive about Atlantis and Lemuria, and one would think that talking about those would be relevant then, to talk about them more than you do.
Oh, I love it when you ring my bell. Okay, so Almin has said that it's very important for us to remember some history, to have some backdrop of where man came from, where the planet came from, whether we originated in the solar system, that sort of thing, which is written in The Gift of the Unicorns. Yet, I haven't extensively spoken of Lemuria and Atlantis. We have given their alphabets, their numerical systems. We've given, the clock from Atlantis and those sorts of things, and those accountings in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. Yet on our shows, I haven't frequently spoken about them. Why? Let me tell you why when we get back from this commercial break.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as a microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Al Mean experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
See, what is removed in mother is removed in man. What is changed in mother is changed in man. When that happens, the earth changes. When that happens, the galaxy changes. When that happens, the cosmos changes. Because the cosmos is, in fact, like a projection on a screen of mother's projector, which is from her cells of her body. And so there were two points in the temples of mother that were designed for clairaudience. The Egyptian eye makeup, when it is extended, where that little line ends, is exactly where those points have been in man. They are foreign to man. They are, in fact, something that that came to the Earth through those from the planet Nibiru, which is discussed in the Zachariah Sitchin's works, and is part of the Sumerian translations that he did. But they came from the Anunnaki, or those from the planet of Nibiru. They're not native to humanity. Mother had them in her temples. They were creating a discordant sound that pulled left brain out of living in the moment, because noise does that. It pulls you out of the moment. When you lose living in the moment, you lose your innocence and you lose your purity. So Mother eliminated those two points in her temples. She then said that there were two planets in planetary systems. One was in Antares and the other was Nibiru, that did not belong in our galaxy, that they had come in from two other galaxies. Information that I also happened to find in, let me see, which library was it? It was the library of the Nazca Desert in Peru, the flower libraries, that also stated that there were two planets in our galaxy, just didn't belong here. So what happened is Mother eliminated them. First, she eliminated the points. The points in her temple were eliminated. Then the two planets were eliminated. Then the galaxies where they came from, those were also eliminated. Those two galaxies were so discordant in their tone because of being so completely non-life enhancing that the cosmos's tones were distorted as a result. So, my beloved brothers and sisters, what did it do for the Earth? Mother said that the Lemurian and the Atlantean civilizations, Atlantean civilization was peopled by the Nibiruans, the Anunnaki, under the very dark imposter god Thoth. The Lemurian ones were peopled by those from the Antarian system millions and millions of years ago, but it was the Lemurian origins was in fact from Antares, and it's from this specific planet in the Antares system. These planets weren't belonging in our galaxy in the first place, and they created these histories. So Mother has said that the history of those two civilizations are to be removed. They're to be wiped out as part of the repository of experiential wisdom that we've gained here on Earth. Now, many great masters have lived in Lemuria, have lived in Atlantis. Yes, but the point is that those masters weren't in fact from those civilizations from the other galaxies. Those were masters that burst in there that were either native to Earth from the ancient ones that have been peopling the Earth, or they came in from other star systems of light. Mother has removed the taint of those foreign frequencies from these masters. So even if you've had a past life there, no problem. That has also been removed from you. But she removed it as a history. So that is why I have not been speaking much about them. And again, I said, Mother, but they're in my book. And she said, no, they can stay in the book. We will write in the book of life that they are now fiction. So, my beloved brothers and sisters, I must be the only teacher out there that has a book that was once true but is now fiction. Portions of these books have become fiction. Why then publish them at all? Because whether they are fictional or not, we can't understand where we are without understanding where we've been. And the point is that even if where we've been has now been erased as a reality, think of it as a parable. an analogy, and there is much to learn from them. Besides, I cannot meaningfully discuss with those major light workers that are gravitating towards my work what's happening today. Big things have happened since this morning. But how can we discuss that when we're not even using the same vocabulary? So it's very helpful if you could study the books, if you're interested in walking this journey with me, because then it does pull forth more truth. The higher the level of those that ask the questions, the higher the truth that it pulls through. That's why it's wonderful for me when Ruchir joins us, because he allows me to learn. Because when I do the show by myself, I'm speaking about what is known. When he is on the air, he asks me things I didn't know before. And so as I just stay in silence and my mouth talks, I learn something. So in the same way, the higher your thoughts are, the more truth we pull in together. So that's the answer to that one.
Okay, but does that, just to be clear on that one, does that mean that even the Lemuria would be as trivial now as Atlantis for anyone's kind of spiritual or whatever kind of history?
You mean as their own personal past life history?
Well, I just wonder.
Or you mean as a teaching?
Well, I think both, in the sense that Lemuria seems, you know, the motherland, that kind of thing. Seems to have Atlantis just appeared more left brain always, but Lemuria seems to be much more of the heart, and I was just wondering if that meant that even Lemuria does not really bear much relevance anymore to anyone.
If we look at the history of the cycles in the Gift of the Unicorns given by the history keepers of the cosmos to me, the history of Lemuria, Lemuria had billions of people, and they had seven smallish continents forming seven root races. Of the fifth root race, which was called the Barishats, a section of them left to people the then Atlantis, which we've also had multiple Atlantises between cataclysms. They became known as the Ramuho, the ones that left. Of those in that fifth root race, there was a small group called the Tlavati, which have just emerged as a library in Bermuda opened. The Tlavati went with the Ramuhal to Atlantis, and some of them stayed behind also as part of Lemuria. The Tlavati are still alive. Why, if all has been wiped out? Because the Tlavati did not come from Nibiru, and Nibiru came, of course, from a galaxy that Mother has wiped out. The Tlavati actually came from Arcturus, and they came from Arcturus to the Earth when the Earth was, for a while, meaning possibly a few thousand years, I don't know what time, in Arcturus. It was part of the Arcturus star system, and that's described in the history of the cycles. At that time, the Tlavati came to Earth, became part of the population, but became a cost, because Mother always told them, isn't this fascinating? Because this elimination of them as part of our history has just happened in the beginning of 2008. The Tlavati were told that their survival depended on not intermingling with the rest of the race. The Tlavati is here again in full force, beautiful masters that have just come out of the Bermuda libraries. It's not relevant if you're looking for past life experiences. It will be as if those lives have never happened. As a teaching aid, well, you know, if they are not here and we are, how much do they have to teach us?
Of course.
You know, and there were times, like for instance, there was a very large landmass to the east of Patagonia. Lemuria jointly with Atlantis, eliminated millions of people because of a trade dispute. They were always at odds, and they joined together and eliminated them. There's been a long history with Lemuria, and it's not all roses. My brothers and sisters, I think we actually have to close. We may even be a few minutes late, but thank you for joining us. We love you dearly, and next week we'll start our new series of shows. Thank you.
A Life in Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content that is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mean. Please join us again next week. Thank you.